Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Are you looking for thrillers with heart? That is the way today's guest, C.J. Lyons, a national bestseller, describes her series of fast-paced and thrilling medical dramas that follows the lives and loves of four women in Pittsburgh's Angels of Mercy ER. Linda Fiore, M.D., ER attending physician, Dr. Gina Freeman, third-year emergency resident, Nora Halloran, RN, and Amanda Mason, fourth-year medical student. Trained in pediatric emergency medicine, CJ has assisted police and prosecutors with cases involving child abuse, rape, homicide, and Munchausen by proxy. She has worked in numerous trauma centers on the Navajo Reservation as a crisis counselor, victim advocate, as well as a flight physician for Life Flight and Stat Medevac. These skills have proved useful during CJ's adventures both in the U.S. and abroad. Her medical suspense novel, Lifelines, debuted from Berkeley March 2008 and became a national bestseller. Publishers Weekly called Lifelines a spot-on debut, a breathtaking, fast-paced medical thriller, and Romantic Times gave it 4.5 stars and made it a top pick. Lifelines received rave reviews from national press, including Newsday, the Baltimore Sun, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as winning the Love is Murder's Reader's Choice Award for Best First Novel and becoming a finalist for the Book Buyer's Choice Award, the National Reader's Choice Award, and the Daphne du Maurier Award. The second in the Angels of Mercy series, Warning Signs, was released January 2009, and the third book, Urgent Care, was released October 27, 2009. And I have read all these books, and they are fantastic. CJ, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Well, thanks, Lisa. I'm happy to be here.
I am so glad to have you here. You know, I loved all of your books, as I mentioned, and I'm so glad that you made the leap from being a doctor to being a writer. And I'm wondering, how was that for you to make that transition?
Well, actually, I was a writer long before I was a doctor.
I was a storyteller
even as a young child, which often landed me in timeout because I had a hard time telling the difference between the real world and my little fictional world in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, being in timeout gave me a whole lot more time to make up a lot more stories.
So you've been doing this since you were a kid then?
Yeah, I've been writing things down ever since I was a little kid. I had a lot of encouragement from my junior high and high school English teachers to actually create new worlds and to not be afraid of creating stories. I just never really thought about getting them published, believe it or not, until just a few years ago when friends of mine who were published authors and had read my work convinced me to enter into a contest sponsored by the Romance Writers of America.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so interesting. So you submitted your work and...
In 2003, mm-hmm. November 2003, and it ended up being a finalist. And this is a national contest that usually has, I believe, a couple thousand entries a year.
Wow.
So that was quite an honor. And that's how I ended up selling my first book.
Oh, my gosh. That's so exciting. And in the meantime, you were still working in pediatric emergency medicine?
Well, I had actually transitioned.
Oh,
my mother
you?
Was diagnosed with cancer. So I moved back to my
sorry.
Small town in Pennsylvania, and I was working with a wonderful group of pediatricians in a community pediatric practice. I mean, we did everything. We made house calls.
Oh, my gosh.
We had patients that were Amish and Mennonite would come up, and, you know, it was a great, great experience. But it was a lot of work. I was part-time, and I was working 40 to 60 hours a week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it gives you new respect for how hard those family and community pediatricians are working out there.
Yeah, I figured that. But, wow, that's a lot of hours, excuse me, for part-time. Oh, my gosh. So how did you find time to write then with working so hard?
Well, actually, believe it or not, it actually helped me write faster because I would be constantly during the day kind of fermenting story ideas. So when I finally got time off where I could sit down and put them into the computer, I would just do what I call blitz writing. I would just, you know, write, and get it all down as fast as I could before I had to go back to work and put the story aside again. But writing is such a wonderful outlet. Even if you're not using it to get published, it helps you to deal with a lot of stuff going on in the real world, but you can do it in a very safe way because it's in this fictional world that you control. And you decide when to break the rules and you decide that the bad guys can get their just deserves. It's not like real life where a lot of times they end up, getting away and never being brought to justice.
Yeah, no, that, you know, that's the what I loved about your book is that the characters, they just feel so real and they're three-dimensional and you get really involved in what their issues are and their struggles. And, you know, you created the four strong, diverse female characters. And in an interview I read online that, you know, someone was interviewing you about, you said that the four women each bear a part of you. Quote, like Amanda, I was the outsider in med school, only a Yankee down south. Like Gina, I was seen as a rebel during residency and my fellowship. I once thought following the rules was the best way to save lives like Nora, and now, like Lydia, I have learned to live by a different set of my own rules. So I like that. So when you're talking about the creating your own story, it made me think of that, about creating your own rules as well.
Well, I think that's really important, and that's something that I didn't really learn until my late 30s, that, you know, we're only given one life, and we have to dare to dream and dare to realize what our vision and our passion is and be committed to making that vision come to life, and to share our passion with the people around us. And that's something, I know that sounds a little trite, but
I
think it really is important, and a lot of people get so involved in just getting that paycheck and putting in the hours at work, they forget about what's really important.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's tough. It's you know, the daily grind. It really does grind people down, and it's hard when you're trying to make ends meet or you have a lot of stress in your life or other issues to focus on what do you really want, what makes you happy, you know, and taking the time. You know, you and I had the pleasure of speaking last night, and I mentioned that my husband's a writer and as well as working a full-time job, and he gets up every day at 4:30 to write. He's been doing it for 10 years.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's really committed, you know, and he did get an agent, and, you know, I won't go on and on about that, but just the fact that it's paying off for him. I mean, he's worked really hard, but he said even if nothing came of it, it's just such a great outlet. And
yes.
You had talked about that.
And I think those are the three keys to success is knowing your vision and being passionate about it and being committed to it. I come from a family where my brother and sister, no one else went to college. I had scholarships all through college and I worked. I still found time to volunteer and to give back to the community. And then I worked all through medical school. At one point, I had three jobs to pay my way through medical school. And I wrote my first novel when I was in medical school. It will never get published. It's safely hidden under the bed.
Oh.
But it was a lot of fun. It was a science fiction kind of space opera.
Oh, and wow. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was a really fun escape from, like you said, that daily grind.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people just, they never find that escape. They never find their passion. Or if they do, they dismiss it. They don't pay attention to it. And I think it's really important. You have to learn how to dare to dream. And for me, taking the leap of faith and leaving my practice behind was probably the hardest decision I ever made, honestly. But it has been very much well worth it. As much as I miss my patients, I just feel like in a lot of ways, especially I get tons of fan mail saying this, that I have the opportunity to touch more lives now than ever with my books. And that's something I never really dreamed I could do. So it's very exciting.
That is exciting. You know, I was going to ask about the highlight of your career, and I had actually read another interview. I like to do a lot of research.
I won't talk too much.
No, it's great. No, I love, you know, hearing what's going on, because I think you're a wonderful writer and obviously a wonderful person. And, no, I was just reading about, you were talking about the highlight was actually the fan mail of your career, and I thought that was really nice. And just to hear that, you know, when I had a television show in California, I used to get emails from folks, and it was so nice. And like, oh, I saw that doctor, and I went to see him, and I'm feeling better. I've had back pain for 20 years, and now for the first time, because you featured that person on the show, and it's such a good feeling, you know, knowing that what you're doing can make such a difference for people.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and that's one of the things that drew me to pediatrics is I loved the feeling of being able to make a difference. And one of the things that I saw during my 17 years practicing medicine was that heroes really are born every day. I mean, when you watch the courage that it takes a family to struggle through an illness of a loved one, or especially a child, or to see the resilience in these kids overcoming just tremendous odds, it's hard not to be touched by that. And then to be able to give that back and hopefully inspire and empower people that are reading my books,
mm-hmm.
it's such a win-win. I can't even begin to describe it.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I know, you know, even from the radio show, I mentioned my TV work, but I've gotten a lot of emails from folks. And I know that I'm going to get an email about you and saying, oh my gosh, I went to the store and I got her books and they're really wonderful. And you and I had talked about that. You know, there's not, I didn't know even know what genre to put this in. I mean, it's a medical thriller, and you had said that there's really not a lot out there like you're doing.
No, it's something different. And that's actually, my publisher asked me to purposely think out of the box and break all the rules. And thankfully, that's something I actually am very comfortable at and very good at doing. I've never followed the rules my whole life. But it's not like your typical medical thrillers, which are usually about the science or about the medicine. In my books, it's not the medicine that saves lives, it's the people that save lives. And it's really about how we can all individually become heroes in our everyday lives. So it focuses on the characters, and it's the first set of medical thrillers that not only feature an ensemble cast, but it's all told from the point of view of the women.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some romantic elements in there, although they aren't classic romance books. In fact, you won't find them shelved in romance or mystery suspense. They're actually shelved, believe it or not, in general fiction and literature to the left of Moby Dick. So
oh.
I always tell people that because it's like I consider them just fun beach reads, and I'm like, yeah, look for them. You'll find the beach reads to the left of Moby Dick. But it is a new kind of world out there in publishing where readers, they don't want to be pigeonholed in any one genre. They want to be able to pick up a book and enter a world where it's not just about the mystery being solved or a romance developing. It's about the people and what they experience in their lives and how they use that to solve the challenges facing them. And I do think that these books have pulled it off. I'm really excited.
Definitely.
I'm working on the fourth book right now.
Oh, go. Any hints or anything?
The title is Isolation.
Oh.
And it will be Gina's story.
Okay.
Which makes it the toughest one because she's had to grow the most during this,
yes,
this series. And it's basically Die Hard in a hospital. So it's,
oh,
very, very fast-paced. It's going to take place in a very compressed time frame. And it's going to try to wrap up most of the loose endings because it's the finale of the, I don't know what the right word is, quadrilogy maybe?
Quartet? No
idea. Four books, yeah. whatever the word is for that.
Now, do you have any ideas after that? Are you going to start a new series, or what are you thinking?
Well, I already started a new series.
Oh.
We've already sold foreign rights. We just took it out to American publishers, so I don't have a publisher yet, but we're hoping that will come pretty soon. And it's about an FBI agent who is also just your nice, ordinary soccer mom. She has a loving husband, a wonderful kid. She's just moved to Pittsburgh, but the hook is that she works crimes against children.
Oh, I love that.
So she's, you know, when you read most FBI books or police procedurals, the detective or the FBI agent is usually, you know, a recovering alcoholic or driven by demons. She's just a normal person, a normal mom, who happens to be really, really good at a job that no one else wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that struggle of family versus work, and especially when your work involves the life and death of kids, you know, it's really hard to say no to it, but you can't say no to your family either. And I think that's a tug of war that many American women can appreciate.
Oh, completely. Yes. I mean, that is so universal. That's I'm really looking forward to reading that, and I'm really looking forward to reading Isolation.
Yeah, that will be Isolation will be out next December.
Okay.
Since it takes place just a few days after the events of Urgent Care, which is set in December, so it's going to be kind of wrapping everything up.
Oh, you know, another thing, you know, speaking about your wonderful books and your complex characters, you know, the other thing I loved about your book are the incredible descriptions, which really transport the reader right there. And, quote, "The sun streaking the eastern horizon surprised her, a slit of gold-rimmed crimson, blinding in intensity as it reflected from the pavement slick with melted frost. She sat in her car, psyching herself up for the walk, long enough for the morning light to edge through the indigo darkness." I love that. That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
I love that kind of writing where you really, not only can you really feel the emotions of the characters you get drawn in, but you can really just picture how everything is, just the way it is. I like that.
I think that's, now that I've made the transition to writing full time, I've been asked to teach a lot of writing courses.
Oh.
And one of the ones that I teach and one of the things that I teach is called world building. And I'm sure you're familiar with this because of your husband being a writer as well. I think it's really important to cement the reader into this world by creating details that don't just show the character's emotion, but also create a visceral response in the reader as well, so that they feel like they're truly a part of that world. So that's what I strive to do. Like, you'll notice during the medical scenes, I cut out all the boring stuff. I just leave what's important for the characters and what they're emotionally going through at the time. So instead of a lot of medical thrillers or technical thrillers will take you through and walk you through each detailed step of, you know, a surgery or an autopsy or what have you, instead what I do is I show the impact of whatever's going on with the patient on the people around the patient, you know, the point of view characters. And I think that that's a way for the reader to kind of vicariously experience the life and death adrenaline rush of the ER without needing to get a medical dictionary and look everything
up. What the heck are they talking about? Yeah. No, you do that so well. I mean, that's what makes the book enjoyable, because I don't want to read a bunch of technical jargon. I want to know, how are the people feeling? What's going on, you know?
Right. And this is always a tug of war I have as well, though, as I leave a lot of technical stuff in there, because that truly, when you are a medical professional, that's how you think. You know, you don't spell out all the abbreviations. That's, you know, you truly think that way. But I try to make it understandable to the reader just in the course of what's going on. And I spell out, of course, anything important. But, you know, in real life, at least in the traumas and the codes that I ran in the ER, no one ever shouted. There was no screaming or, you know, it was all very well, calm, choreographed dance is basically what it was, because I trusted my team. And they all knew their jobs, and we all just, you know, took care of things. So it could really be quite boring in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of figure out how to condense that and distill the emotion from those real-life episodes and make them something that a reader would want to, you know, experience. Because this is supposed to be entertaining.
Oh, of course. And speaking of episodes and entertaining, it makes me think of the television shows like ER and Grey's Anatomy and Three Rivers. Or, I mean, it seems like every other day, Mercy. I mean, there's always a new one.
Yeah.
How do you like those shows?
Well, I stopped watching ER after George Clooney left.
Yeah, I understand.
But actually, in the early days of ER, they had an 800 number.
Oh.
And we could fax in ideas or cases that we experienced in our real-life ER to the producers, to, I think it went to Lance Gentle, his office. And so that was a lot of fun. In fact, one of the cases that I had that one of our nurses faxed in, a little baby that had an earring that was occluding its airway, obstructing its airway, ended up on one of the shows. Now, I didn't know if that was specifically our case, because that's something that could happen at any ER, but it was still fun to see. And it was like, and they happened to have the woman physician, what was her name? Susan something.
Oh, I don't know.
Was the person that was taking care of it. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that really was our case. But so the early years of ER, I think they really got it right emotionally, you know, kind of the crucible that the ER is, and how things can be really funny, even if you don't think they should be funny, and, you know, it, just how life goes on. Yeah. Grey's Anatomy, yeah, sorry. I had a little hard time getting into Grey's Anatomy because, honestly, a surgical intern is going to be about 25 or 26 years old. And a top-flight, you know, specialty attending surgeon, like, you know, the brain surgeon, who's supposed to be the best in the country, he's going to be in his late 50s to get to, you know, finish with training and to get to that level of stature. And I had a little bit of a yuck factor. I mean, you know, here's these, you know, people that could be old enough to be their fathers preying on these interns and having sexual relationships with them. And I was just like, there was a little bit of a yuck factor for me. But then I got a good look at Patrick Dempsey, and I was like, oh, that all just went away. But you that know, has nothing to do with reality. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, if you're on call for 36 or 48 hours wearing the same pair of scrubs and you haven't had a chance to shower, yeah, you're not really into romance.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the sex that goes on. You know, I've never actually watched that show, and I only watched ER a couple times. One that I'm curious about, and actually I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Lisa Sanders, who's a technical advisor to House. She wrote a really wonderful book, Every Patient Tells a Story.
It's from her New York Times columns, which I read all the
time. Oh, well, great. Yeah, she's going to be on in a couple weeks, so everyone should check itsyourhealthradio.org.
I have to admit, I love Hugh Laurie.
I like him too.
Any other actor could, you know, do what he did with House, but House is not medicine. House is a Sherlock Holmes story, okay? Mm-hmm. It's basically solving the mystery, because any real-life doctor, if you notice, they have it purposely set up so that he makes at least three mistakes before gets it right.
That's true.
And also the way he practices medicine, it's like, well, he might have an infection. Let's put him on every antibiotic known to man just in case. It's like, Lisa will tell you that is not good medicine.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, well, this test will kill him if it's not this. So let's see if he gets worse. Yeah, no, that's not how we practice medicine.
But it is good TV, right? It's
exciting.
Yeah, it's
good TV. You're not going to have the fellow. So that's someone just right out, still in training to be the person that's drilling a hole in someone's brain. It's like, no, sorry. Give me the neurosurgeon, the real doctor. So I do have some problems with what they do with medicine. But you can tell they're kind of tongue-in-cheek about it, because even in the opening credits, I don't watch House, so they might have changed this. Mm-hmm. I only saw it like the first season.
Yeah, I've only seen a few.
In the opening credits, they had a chest x-ray that was backwards where the heart was on the right. And I was like, okay, either these guys are really too dumb to look at an anatomy book, or they realize that, you know, we're trying to give people a hint that this is not real medicine.
Oh, I see. Well, so, you know, my favorite medical show of all time is Scrubs. Funny as heck, I thought.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that show.
And you don't have to worry about it being real medicine.
No, that's just
again,
fun.
Scrubs isn't about the medicine.
It's just fun.
It's about the quirkiness of life and, you know, how we fall in love and how we deal with our bosses and how we just get through the day.
Yeah.
And I can watch a show like that because I don't have to be constantly saying, oh, God, I would never do that in real life. Whereas House, I'm like, I'm throwing things at the TV saying, oh, you idiot, can't you see it? Fanconi's anemia. You know what I mean? I get the diagnosis right in the first 30 seconds and spend the rest of the show just yelling at the TV.
Well, that could be cathartic, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Now, but the hard thing is that they did a study, and I forget, it was one of the bigger magazines, and I forget who it was, maybe Time or Newsweek, did a study about a year ago, and about a third of Americans say that they learn about medicine from these TV shows, like Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice and House. And to me, that's scary.
Yeah, that is.
You're going to have to ask Lisa about that.
Okay.
How she feels about that.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to it. You know, the time goes by so fast, EJ. I want to encourage everyone to go out, get your books, Warning Signs. Lifelines is first, right? Then Warning Signs. Now Urgent Care. And just, again, everyone, you've been listening to 91.5 FM, WUML, Thinking Out Loud. This is It's Your Health. And I've had the pleasure of speaking with CJ Lyons, national bestseller. They're just so enjoyable. And they're just great. I mean, they're just interesting and the characters are great. And you care about these women. I care about these women. And I want to know more. So I'm looking forward to Isolation.
Well, thank you.
Well,
having me on.
Oh,
this
sure.
Been fun.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I'd love to have you back sometime. Now, how can people get in touch with you? What's your website?
My website is www.cjlyons.net.
Okay.
And my email's on there and all the contact information.
Well, terrific. Well, again, I'm going to be looking forward to December is when your book's going to come out.
Yes.
And then I can't wait for your next series. That sounds fabulous.
Well, hopefully that'll be on the road not much longer then.
All right, CJ. Well, you take care and thank you so much. To reach me, go to itsyourhealthradio.org. And everyone have a great week and keep being healthy. Bye-bye.